chakra que já é para os gols, e o Shri Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda se vê que dá a dar os gols, o que vem de já. Se se vai a Krishna Gopa, o Vida Shama, quando o Adam foi de Deus, o Dandi já. Shri Vrindavan Dandi já, Anagoda Dandi já, Gama Jana Tosi Bhati de Dandi já, Ananda Bodhi Vaishnava Vrindi de já. Samavetta Bhakta Vrindi de já, Gopramanandi, Yom Varsi, Samadavo, Vizal, 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 Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namah Vishnu Vinaya Krishna Prasthapitale Shri Mari Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Prachadane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Parsaptadesha Tadane. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shubhasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 from Candlestick Sabha chapter 14 verse 29 Atta Amra Patim Rajan
Atta Amra Patim Rajan
Bhavitaika
Tavatmaja
Bhavitaika
Tavatmaja
Marsha Sloka Pradastujam
Marsha Sloka
accepted it to mean that there would certainly be jubilation because of the birth of his future son. but that he would be the king's only son, and being very proud of his great wealth and empire, would not be very obedient to his father. Thus the king was satisfied, thinking, let there be a son, it does not matter if he is not very obedient. In Bengal, there's a problem that instead of having no material uncle, it's better to have a material uncle who is blind. The king accepted this philosophy, thinking that a disobedient son would be better than no son at all. The great sage Chanakya Pandit says, what is the use of a son who is neither a learned scholar nor a devotee? Such a son is like a blind, diseased eye, which always causes suffering. Nevertheless, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he is useless. This attitude is represented by the history of King Chitrakirti. As Kritika Devi, after receiving the semen of Lord Shiva from Agni, conceived a child called Skanda. Kritajyoti, having received semen from Chitraketu, became pregnant after eating remnants of food from the yogic form of Angira. Having received semen from Maharaj Chitraketu, king of Surasena, Queen Kritajyoti gradually developed her pregnancy. Oh, King Parikshit, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. Thereafter, in due course of time, the son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Surasena were extremely pleased. King Chitraketu was especially pleased. After purifying himself by bathing and by decorating himself with ornaments, he engaged learned brahmanas in offering benediction to the child and performing the birth ceremony. Under the brahmanas, who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity of gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows. As a cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, beneficent King Chitraketu increased the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirables to everyone. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, his affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when Chitraketu, after great difficulty, received the son's affection for the son, increased day after day. The mother's attraction and attention to the son, like that of a child's father, excessively increased. The other wives, seeing Kritajyoti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with a desire to have sons. As King Chitraketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Kritajyoti increased, but gradually he lost affection for the other wives, who had no sons. The other queens were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence towards them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamented. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband, dishonored by her co-wives, exactly like a maidservant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Prabhupada has stated about Chanakya Pandit, a person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. For such a person living at home and living in the forest are equal. Similarly, for a woman who has no son, who is not cared for by her husband, whose co-wife neglect her, treating her like a maidservant, going to the forest is better than to remain at home. Even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Kritajyoti's opulence and possessing his son, Kritajyoti's co-wives always grunted envy, which became extremely strong. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence. Being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Unaware of the poison administered by his co-wives, Queen Kritajyoti walked within the house, thinking her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand he was dead. Thinking that her child was sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritajyoti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the mirrors, my dear friend, please bring my son here. When the maidservant approached the child, who was lying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upwards. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground unconscious. O King Parikshit, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women, being equally aggrieved. They also began to cry. The queens who administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their own offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. And because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire. And as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling on the ground. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and learned brahmanas present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. When the queen saw her husband, Chitraketu, emerge in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family, she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain of the cores of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers, and all the Brahmanas. The garlands of flowers decorating the queen's head fell and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the chlorine on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a kurari bird. Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you have created. You are certainly inexperienced in creation, for during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful. Wherefore, this is the way of the condition. In this way, this is the way the conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator when he meets reverses. Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of God of being crooked, because some people are happy and some are not. Here the queen blames Supreme Providence for her son's death. Following the creative laws, the father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of Providence, then Providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the creative being. Actually, it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how these subtle laws of fruit of activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of creation, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this continues the story of the birth of the sun. So, as previously explained, Chitraketu lamented because they didn't have a sun, and then by the mercy of Angira, a sun was predicted, and then a sun was actually born. But Angira said, this sun will be the cause of jubilation and lamentation. And Angira, the king, did not quite understand what that meant. But because the son was born, he was very jubilant. But then the description comes here of how the other queens got envious of the other queen. And the king, unfortunately, neglected the other queens. So therefore, that they decided to kill the son and poison him. And then consequently have this description of the lamentation of the king and the queen and everyone else for the dead son. And then here we have the queen speaking and criticizing the Supreme Lord for having arranged for the child to die ahead of the father. So that is considered inauspicious. So one thing is inauspicious not to have a son, and then if the son is born and then he dies prematurely before he's grown up, then that is also considered to be inauspicious. So this is the cause of the lamentation. Angira correctly predicted that the birth of the son would be joy and his loss would be the lamentation. So this must take place in any case, because everybody dies. If one is born, then one must die. So this is stated by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also. Everything that is born must die. So why lament? Because we know that any happiness we have will sooner or later end. So there should be no lamentation when people die, because we know already they're going to die. The only problem is that generally, if one is born, then his lifespan should be long, and therefore they will outlive the parents. So that is the normal condition in life. You have a certain age, and the parents will die before the children. Of course, this is also a problem, because then the children have to lament for the parents who have died. So either way, there is lamentation. So this is unavoidable in the material world. Every joy must have some lamentation also. Sometimes it is more, sometimes it is less, but nevertheless it's going to be there. And the more we're attached to objects, the more we have to lament when they disappear. So, one of the pieces of advice given in Jnana is simply become detached from everything. And don't be attached to the object, and therefore when it comes, we are not overjoyed, and when it disappears, we don't lament. So we'll see this repeated several times in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. A person who is advanced does not rejoice or lament when situations call for it. So that is a sign of advancement. And why they can do this is because they are detached from material things. They do not attach any enjoyment to these things that they may get in the material world. So in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that the person who is pragya, or situated in knowledge, is satisfied inside himself with the Atma, Atma-jnana. And therefore, when you get things or lose things, you are not concerned. So this is a situation for the jnani, a preferable situation for jnana, to be very calm in all situations. Also, we have the idea of sama, having equal vision. So a person who is learned, the pundit, will see the cow and the brahmana and the chandala and the elephant is the same. How can they do that? Because they're not looking at bodies anymore. So they will not be disgusted with one body or attracted to another body. So this is some sort of cultivation that is the goal of jnana. It means we're detached from everything in the material world. So, of course, in bhakti also this takes place, but this is not the goal of bhakti, simply to become detached from the material world. The sign of advancement in bhakti is to become attached to the Supreme Lord. And the more one is attached to the Supreme Lord, the greater is one's advancement. Consequently, if one loses the Lord, then one's lamentation will also be very great. So there is no sense of sama for the devotee, because if the Lord, they meet the Lord, then they're overjoyed, and when the Lord leaves, then they're in lamentation. So this is the situation in the spiritual world. We see fluctuations. So then the conclusion may be that why go to the spiritual world? Because we have to lament and everything, like just like we do here. So the answer is that no, that is not the same, because that lamentation is followed by greater joy, because nobody dies in the spiritual world and the Lord always returns. That does not take place in the material world, because people have material bodies and we're attached to material bodies. The spiritual world, one is attached to Krishna, and his body and his self are non-different, and the devotee's body also is eternal. So there's no permanent loss. So any separation from the Lord is simply an arrangement of the Lord to for his pastimes, and then finally the Lord appears again. So there's no permanent sense of lamentation. So this type of lamentation in the spiritual world actually is one of the rasas. There's karuna rasa, feeling of lamentation and whatever. So that is part of the rasas in the spiritual world, and it helps to create variety within their love. So therefore, attachment is not necessarily wrong or bad. If it's for material things, then it gives rise to these fluctuations of happiness and distress. If it is in the spiritual world, and it's attachment for Krishna, then it causes increased bliss. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with that. In the process of dhyana, only one achieves detachment from everything. And therefore, one is peaceful. But greater than that is to develop this attachment to the Supreme Lord. So developing that attachment for the Lord, or ruchi, or taste, is easier than cultivating detachments in dhyana or yoga. And the reason is that the jiva by nature wants to be active, and we try to suppress our actions and our perceptions, etc. It's very difficult. But if we can cultivate our desires in relation to the Supreme Lord and do activities for the Lord, this is an easier process. So that is what bhakti is, and that is why in the Bhagavatam this is the process recommended. If a person is overcome by these dualities of happiness and distress and seeing in terms of body, of course, it will be very difficult to advance in bhakti also. Because this means, great material attachment means, we're not attached to the Supreme Lord at all. So therefore, we have great ignorance. So a sign of our ignorance is this fluctuation and happiness and distress, etc. However, by the mercy of devotees, even in such situations, there can be some mercy given, and therefore a person can advance. So people may be covered over in the material world if they get the mercy of devotees, and then they can make some progress in that position. As we see here in the case of King Chitraketu, very attached, but ultimately he got mercy and he could understand the situation. So, therefore, nothing is hopeless in the material world, but the more we get involved with these attachments, the harder it is for us to actually find a solution. That is, the more we become overcome by ignorance, the more unlikely it is that we can get some advancement in terms of bhakti. So therefore it's described that a qualification for bhakti is to not be too attached to the material world. And then that is easier for a person if they don't have so many material attractions. On the other hand, if they have too much detachment, then that is also not good, because then they become jnanis. So therefore, a person who is not too materially attached and not too materially detached, then that person is qualified for performing bhakti yoga. So this story here shows the great attachment of king and his wife. We see here their complete lamentation over the loss of the son. And consequently, they're criticizing the Supreme Lord. You are faulty because you have one plan, but then you interfere with that plan and you make another plan. And instead of the son living longer, the son lives shorter, causing distress to the parents. So this, of course, we can see is selfish also. Thinking of themselves, arrange for my happiness by making the son live longer. Because of being deprived of one's personal happiness, then a person is likely to lose faith in the Lord. Consequently, criticizing this guy. So this is not a very good sign. So this is another symptom of how material attachment is not too conducive for advancement in devotion. tend to criticize the Lord because our enjoyment is taken away. On the other hand, one who's a good devotee will welcome the problems that material nature gives. He takes that as mercy of the Supreme Lord so that he can become free of his material attachments. And it said in the Bhagavatam that the Lord is really merciful, then he takes everything away. And that devotee accepts it and he welcomes it. And this is the cause of his advancement. He continues his bhakti in spite of all the material difficulties of karma, etc. But he understands that the law of karma is working not because we should blame the Lord, but because of our own activities in the past. So therefore, he doesn't put the blame on the Lord. Whereas here we see the queen is blaming the Lord. Why you make arrangements like this for us to have the sun appear and then die on us. So this is not understanding properly their own position in karma. And they then criticize the Lord. So too much material attachment will lead to such a situation. It is called anartha in that it can create obstacles, but not to devotion itself, because devotion is unobstructed. So in spite of all the karmas, a person can advance. So therefore, a person who is a chandalan or whatever, which is karma, can still do bhakti. So in that sense, it's not an obstruction. However, if we are attached to material enjoyment, then the karmas in terms of suffering that we get in this lifetime can be a distraction for us, because then we're thinking I'm suffering and then I gotta get happy or whatever. So then we're thinking of our material body. So this can distract us from devotion. So one who is not up to the level of nishtha will definitely be affected by his karmas. And one who is at nishtha won't be affected. No, they don't consider it a blessing. But the intensity of this pain and separation is in proportion to their attachment. So the more one is attached, then the more pain one will feel in separation. But the pain of separation leads to greater attachment. And consequently, the Lord appears again. So the devotee does not try to purposely create separation in order to get more attachment and more bliss. No, and that would be material. Same situation, but they don't react in the same way.
Oh, Well, of course, the process of bhakti itself reduces karma. But then, of course, they may still get some effects. But the reaction is not the same as a normal person because they're detached also. So they get less effects, plus they're more detached.
What causes that little effects to come?
Well, there's a process of anarthana vritti, so if the karmas are all not destroyed until bhava stage, then they're going to have some effects. Shouldn't, unless you're materially attached, then you get affected and then you... No. So one can fall down, but if one continues bhakti, bhakti is not interfered with. So Krishna says, sadhare vasa mantavyam, a person commits sinful activity, but I still consider him a devotee if he continues his bhakti. If one does apuran, of course, that's a different position. One may give up bhakti also. Well, combination, obviously. If we don't do anything, we can't expect anything. Well, it could be previous lifetimes, bhakti also. From previous lifetimes. Aparans have to do with devotion and bhakti. Sin has to do with normal people in the material world.
You said that if somebody has to chant the holy name in this present form, body, then they should have done some previous births, some pious activities, that only they can chant the holy name. Is it like that?
No. One can get mercy in this lifetime. And it's not punya that causes it, it's actually bhakti which will cause it. Punyas are material, so they do not cause bhakti. It's only bhakti itself or mercy of devotees that will cause more bhakti.
Karantara